we go.
Dreamland, where everything happens on time.
Hello? Is this on? Hello? Hello?
We'll have a little open line time toward the end of the hour.
Yeah.
Right now, let's welcome back our friend Stephen Caruso from Spotlight PA, who covers everything Harrisburg for those fine folks. Stephen, first off, good morning. Thanks for putting up with us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem. Always happy to be here and talk about Harrisburg.
Okay. All right. He's obviously getting paid, so there we go. Let's jump right into it, okay? Let's stop, because I'm sure we have many new listeners. We always have new listeners. Stephen, do us a favor. Tell us about yourself again, your background. What do you do for Spotlight PA? Maybe tell us about Spotlight PA, because you guys are great. Tell us about you. Go.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been covering Harrisburg for about 7 years now. I've been at Spotlight for about four. Spotlight PA covers state government, particularly the legislature and the governor. That's my focus. We also cover some of the agencies. We also cover, you know, we have county bureaus in State College and in Berks County. We're always trying to expand. The goal is to do investigative reporting or just accountability reporting focused on, you know, what are people with power actually doing? And that's what I do in Harrisburg. And, well, let me tell you, there's a lot of things that aren't getting done in Harrisburg. That's been more of the story recently.
Oh, okay.
I'll bet it feels a lot longer than 7 years that you've been covering Harrisburg.
It's funny you say that, because I actually literally had a conversation with someone yesterday where they kind of stopped me, and they're like, how long have you been doing this? And I kind of like looked at them and said, is that a question because you think I haven't been doing it long enough, or you think I've been doing it for too long?
Oh, okay. Website, spotlightpa.org. Again, these folks do really good stuff. All right. All right. Now, Stephen, if I count, you might need to cue up the happy music again.
Yeah.
If I count correctly, today is day number 100 without a new state budget. I think
that
I count. Is that right?
I'll be honest. I did have to use the Google how many days since. So, like, unless Google was counting it wrong, and that's always a possibility. I don't always trust them. But, you know, yeah, 100 days.
Day 100. Now, normally 100 we celebrate, you know, like, oh, that's really terrific. So I assume they're celebrating down at the state capitol today. They must be celebrating, right?
I'm sure they're celebrating with a large amount of political fundraisers. But, no, look, I don't think anyone's that happy about the setup right now. People are still talking, but the conversations have not always seemed productive. I literally caught up with Matt Bradford, the House Democratic leader, who said, you know, I asked him, are talks productive? He said, some days, kind of shrugged and walked away. But he said, talk about the state budget was better than talk about the Philadelphia Phillies, wherever the heck that's worth. You know, where we're at is it's 100 days late because there's just deep disagreements between Senate Republicans who are worried about the state's long-term financial health, and then House Democrats and Governor Josh Pirro is also a Democrat over what needs to be spent on now because, you know, the state has a good amount in savings, about $11 billion in cash reserves. Those were built up during the pandemic because there were more tax returns than expected, and the federal government was putting a lot of money into states. That money's still there, but if you use it for recurring expenses, you know, like putting more money in, always a need in the state, especially as the population gets older. If you put it into education, public education, if you put it into transit, if you put it into any of the many, many things that are needed, that isn't just a one-off investment. It's not just, you know, buying a house with cash. It's like paying a mortgage. It needs consistent revenue to cover it. And this difference over how much can we actually spend right now to cover our costs in the future is what's driving this 100-day impasse now. And the problem is we're at the point where it's starting to really have an impact on people who rely on state funding, and there are a lot of them.
Well, I'm going to ask about that a little bit later on. Let me get this dumb question out of the way, because I'm good at those. We've mentioned a mountain of times about the June 30th law that says the state budget's supposed to be passed by June 30th. Is anybody down there, like, thinking, let's just rescind this law because it's the most pointless law out there? It never hits. Just get rid of the doggone thing. I mean, there's no penalty, right, for missing the June 30 deadline?
The penalty is only to people who rely on the constant state appropriation, like the law actually getting signed that says money goes here, money goes there. So mostly contractors, nonprofits, schools, counties, things like that. state employees are still going to be paid. That includes elected officials and their staff. Things like state parks are still going to run, corrections offices and jails, they're still going to be running and open, obviously. You know, state police are still going to be out there patrolling. Where it hurts is the people who, like, basically are forced to, people who take on state contracts for a lot of the nuts and bolts of government, mental health, addiction treatment, foster care, road contracts, on and on and on. Like, that's where you kind of start to see it, is in these things that, you know, all the other ways that government helps us, that those are the people who are struggling right now.
Now, if I'm correct, Stephen, this week, finally, all of the legislators are at work in Harrisburg. They're all there, House, Senate, although for what, the Senate was out for weeks or something?
Everybody made it back from the Steelers game in Ireland, did they? Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Nice to have
everyone
them back.
Made it back in one piece, as far as I can tell.
Fantastic.
Are they all back at work, allegedly, this week? Is that accurate?
So everyone's in Harrisburg. I mean, what I want to say, too, is that, like, budget deals are negotiated by about 10 people. I could rattle them off by name. They might not always appreciate that. But we're talking, look, the top legislative leaders, the governor, the majority leader in the Senate, majority leader in the House, and their top staff. That's pretty much the people in the, you know, room where it happens. Then, other than that, your rank-and-file lawmaker, unless they are that leader, doesn't have much to say besides waiting for a deal to be cut and for it to be brought in front of them and close their meeting and say, we have a deal, vote for it or don't. And obviously, if you're cutting that deal, you're hoping everyone's going to vote for it. So I say all this to say that, like, you know, everyone's there. There's no reason these conversations couldn't happen over a Zoom room or everyone meeting in, you know, a clandestine pub in the center of the state. I don't know, State College, Pennsylvania. But, you know, so yeah, everyone's in Harrisburg, but there is no requirement everyone's in Harrisburg to get stuff done. I mean, I can tell you the main thing is there are going to be 20-plus legislative fundraisers in Harrisburg this week, though, because everyone's there and so are the lobbyists.
Stephen, do they still have smoke-filled rooms? Allegedly, that's where a lot of deals get made, smoke-filled rooms. Do they have those?
Well, you know, smoking indoors is prohibited in many parts of the Commonwealth. But look, that's to say, I think the proverbial smoke-filled room, I can think of one or two that I know people will meet, you know, to keep things private in the Capitol. But with that said, you know, that's like, those sort of conversations are just happening all the time. And I think the hardest part is that, like, people are chatting, but there's just been no results from it. The pressures on everyone are pretty immense. And I think the other thing is, too, I've been starting to think about this is, like, you know, we think of everything as Democrat versus Republican. But Governor Josh Shapiro has even said, he's almost framed it as a three-party negotiation where it's like, oh, I am playing shuttle diplomacy, going back and forth between Leader Pittman, the Republican leader in the Senate, and Leader Bradford, the Democratic leader in the House. And I'm trying to get them to work together. So with that said, I think when you think about it, it's like a three-party negotiation where, yeah, Democrats are, you know, Democrats together, but they want different things. That's the way I've been thinking about it, which kind of adds, I think, to some of the why it's there. And then we can get into Senate Republicans, and the main thing I'd say there is just there's really deep ideological divisions within that caucus. You have people who say if we spend a dollar more than last year's budget, we are betraying our constituents alongside their hope for, like, school vouchers. I think there are other Republicans who are willing to cut a deal if, you know, what was put in front of them, but bridging those divides is also really difficult.
All right, now you touched on this a little bit ago, but let's go over it again. What are, and there's a lot of issues, what are the big ones? What are the key issues? You mentioned far apart, two sides. What are the key issues that have been holding things up now for 100 days? And you can go as long with that list as you want. Go right ahead.
I mean, I think it really all has to come down to spending. And under that umbrella, though, what you put is you put, how much is the state spending on Medicaid? How much is the state spending on public education? And should that money be spent differently? How much is being spent on public transit? You know, public transit agencies have been saying that, including from SEPTA in Philadelphia to CATA in Center County to the PRT out in Pittsburgh, they've been saying that they don't have enough money, that they, because of changing patterns, that they're going to hit a fiscal cliff and have to cut services. You know, schools have, there's a court ruling saying that there's a court ruling that says schools need more money, especially poor districts that don't have a big property tax base. You know, that was in 2023. They got some money last year, but there are people who always say public school needs more money. And then you also, like, when it comes to Medicaid, obviously there's been big federal changes on that front. People, like insurance is getting up there. More people are falling back on the federal option of Medicaid. You know, it's a dual program between both the federal government and the state government. And, you know, it always has more money. Also, Ozempic is on there. That's an expensive drug, but also it's a drug that, you know, gives people better outcomes. Is it worth in the long run? These are all, like, debates that people are having over what's the right amount. Governor Shapiro has proposed about $51.5 billion in his opening budget. Last year it was about $47.3 billion, maybe it was $6 billion. You know, that's a 8% increase or so. Is 8% too much? That's kind of the question. And then the other option is when you do a budget talk is if you're spending more money than some people want, what else do you add to the pot to make everyone happy? You know, it's a deal. Maybe some people are okay with more spending if you say, you know, implement school vouchers, you know, money for kids to go to private school. Does that win people over? Then you got to convince the other side, Democrats, that that's okay. And then, you know, you're kind of almost like back to square one if that does it. And just repeat that over and over and over again.
Stephen, there are a lot of needs out there. There's no question. I've been asking this of legislators when we have them in, our local legislators. I'm genuinely curious. I'm pretty sure I know the answer. But are you aware of any organization, like one, that gets money from the state government that's like, you know what? You could actually, we're good. You could actually reduce what you've been giving us for the upcoming year. Our expenditures last year were a little less than what we anticipated. We're good. Just give us a little less and we'll be just fine. Is there any organization out there that you're aware of that's like, that's even okay with just let's do exactly what we did last year? Or is every organization that gets funding from the state, and I'm not faulting, don't, I'm again, costs are going up. I get it. I'm just genuinely wondering, is there any organization that you're aware of that's like, you know what, we're good. Just give us a little less than you did a year ago.
I mean, look, I'm not aware of the budget requests of every single organization. With that said, I'm going to go back to, you know, inflation is hard. A lot of things have been flat-funded. Mental health, for instance, got a big cut under former Governor Tom Corbett when Republicans were trying to balance state's budget, and that was never restored. So we have mental health agencies using basically the same level of funding they had about 14 years ago, 12 years ago. And, you know, think about how much inflation's eaten into people's pockets in the last 5 years. Imagine you're still trying to get by on what you were making in 2012. And that's mental health. Definitely, like, I don't know of anyone who's specifically saying, oh, we can get by with the same amount of money or less. Yeah. But I also don't know if, like, you know, who does that? Nobody goes into a salary discussion and, you know, says, no, you don't have to pay me more money. You know, part of that is just that's how you negotiate.
Sure. I just was just wondering. Pretty sure I knew the answer. Just wondering.
Yeah, the answer is none.
Well, and listen, it is interesting because there has been a lot of attention, and I would argue a lot of lip service. My full disclosure, most of our audience is aware of this, but my wife runs a nonprofit that deals with mental health with young people locally. Mm-hmm. And it is pretty remarkable to me, and I've seen some of this up close and personal. You don't find anybody that says, nah, don't worry about mental health. We don't need to worry about that. But, and just the opposite, most people are like, yeah, man, we've got to do something to address it. All right, let's get some funding.
Mm-hmm. I mean...
Hello? Anybody? No, I'm busy telling you how concerned I am about mental health. Right, but my wife's foundation happens to provide all of the programs for free. They do a bunch of teaching programs. Mm-hmm. They work with the kiddos themselves. They put on a bunch of free classes and opportunities and all of this stuff. And again, you go around, oh, yes, man, you're doing great work. It's very important. You know, we could use some funding. Well, we think what you're doing is really important. Yep, and we could use... No, you're doing a great job.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, again, and with all of this stuff, and again, there, I get it. There's a lot of stuff out there, and we are limited in how much I think we can go after taxpayers. It's why I'm a big fan. I wish we would really start to do some more creative stuff. Maybe give some tax breaks here and there, and instead of having companies and corporations give to the government via taxes, say, hey, why don't you just directly earmark X amount of money that normally would have been collected by the government and earmark it to some sort of, good work being done in your community, and take out that middleman of the government, which inevitably cuts significantly the money that it gets returned to the nonprofits from the original source. Your thoughts on the overall process and trying to prioritize.
Yeah, well, I'll say two things. One, like, I mean, the state does do something similar to what you're saying with school choice, with private schooling. There's the Educational Improvement Tax Credit, EITC, that the state has. Actually, the federal tax bill that was passed under Trump implemented a national version of this. And what this does is basically say, if you are a rich person or LLC or, you know, something that fits into the right accounting profile. Please don't make me try to describe that further. I will fail. If you give money to a private school scholarship fund or, like, you know, a qualifying group, you can get a tax break for it. So we've done some programs like that. I mean, the state does that. Usually gets criticized because when you allow for it to be just the government gives you a tax break for your own private giving, it's harder to hold it accountable. Of course, you know, you can make the same argument that the government occasionally is hard to hold accountable. I'm sure folks have encountered that. But with that said, you know, on the question of budget priorities, on mental health, yeah, budgeting is all about priorities. If everything's a priority, nothing is a priority. That's a trite phrase, but what I happen to agree with. And, you know, one thing I'd point out is this isn't exactly a budget line, but the state has about $300 million or so into gambling revenues, if I'm remembering it correctly, that goes directly to horse racing. It helps fund purses for anyone who races a horse in Pennsylvania. And now we could sit here and be like, well, that's, you know, there are a lot of, that elicits a lot of response from people. But the thing is like, horse racers have a lobby, and they have a story to tell. And their story would be, this is subsidizing horse farmers who are all over the state. And they're the ones who, you know, raise the horses, tend to the horses. There is an industry behind that. So at some point, I think there just has to be a conversation of, like, if the government is going to take tax money and put it somewhere, is that the best use of it? And let everyone have an open debate over it. But that's not usually how things work.
Stephen, what exactly is the governor's role here? All right, he had a budget idea way back when. What is he doing anything right now, or is he just kind of essentially sitting back, okay, guys, you finish, I'll sign it, come on, let's go. What's his role right now?
So the most charitable interpretation would be, you know, the governor's job is to introduce a budget, which he did in February, and it's been 200-some days since then. Then his plan didn't get a vote. There is this process that's been in place in Harrisburg where, like, the governor has his address, then there are budget hearings where people talk about it. They, like, you know, interview / interrogate the governor's staff about all the details of it. They raise concerns. They say what they like. A bit of political theater, never hurt anyone. Then there's supposed to be closed-door talks where everything gets passed by June 30th. Obviously, that process has not worked. Has not worked in a couple of years. Like, in the way it's supposed to. So, you know, what the governor would say is that he's done his role historically. His people have shown up at the table. I see his legislative staff running around. You know, I know he meets with people semi-regularly, top lawmakers. So, like, you know, the question could be, what else could he do? At some point, the legislature has to legislate. Definitely something I hear. The legislature's on track to not pass that many laws, as per usual, and the governor's on track to not sign a lot. Again, as per usual in recent years. But then on the other side of it, you know, I've had some lobbyists say they think the governor should be more involved, that, like, the governor's role in a negotiation when it goes south like this is to basically lock everyone in the room and say, we're not leaving until we agree to something, and use the force of their position and their status, their bully pulpit, to just, you know, kind of bang on a table and say, this is what we're doing. Get everyone in line. I think part of the reason that's not happening is in 2023, his first budget, Senate Republicans had the assumption he would do that to pass school vouchers. That didn't happen. In fact, he ended up vetoing money for school vouchers within that budget deal when House Democrats expressed their displeasure with it and basically told him, we're not going to vote for it. So, you know, I think that that has sort of left a blanket of mistrust on negotiations that's really hard to counteract, especially once you get to 100 days, because at this point, everyone recognizes the cost of a no budget, but getting people to budge is an entirely different conversation.
All right, Stephen, I'm blanking. I should know this. 100 days is a lot. This has gone longer. Yeah. What's the record for the longest wait before a new budget finally showed up?
Don't ask me to turn in the days. So I guess if I did it once, it'd probably be like 220 or so days. It was, I believe, Governor Tom Wolf, at least in modern years, Governor Tom Wolf's first budget wasn't signed. The budget address is in, that would have been March of 2015. I don't think he signed the final legislation until March of 2016. So again, it was starting in June 30th, if you get what I'm saying. Just like about 200 days, about 7-8 months.
Oh my Lord. Okay. Let's see. I've got a story here. The Altoona Mirror has a story. The Altoona School District, if something doesn't happen, could run out of money by the end of November. And apparently, if that would happen, they'd either have to take out a loan or liquidate some of their assets. In other words, sell stuff so that they've got some money. Now, I don't know if this was you or where I saw this. All right, Stacey Garrity is the state treasurer. She also happens to be a Republican candidate for governor next year. Can she just, she's the state treasurer, can she loan money? Is she allowed to do that as the state treasurer? Are you familiar with this? I'm just wondering. Yes. She might try to do something here. What could she do?
So she did announce about, I want to say, a couple weeks ago that she was starting a program to specifically try and lend money. She capped the program originally at $500 million to counties and Head Start. So, you know, that's, you know, like pre-K programs, child care programs for pre-kindergarten kids. And that the idea being, because what that school district, Altoona School District, is dealing with, this idea of, well, we got to, like, liquidate assets or we have to, like, take out debt. You know, the other option is cuts of schools, you know, again, harder for them to fire off teachers when you got a set number of kids that need to be taught. Like your options are, if you're an agency that depends upon state dollars and you're not getting it, is that, you know, go in the debt, use up your reserves, make cuts. The Garrity announced this program. I would say it's now become a political firecracker because there is debate over, can she do this legally? And then there's debate over, you know, why is she doing this when effectively I've had one nonprofit operator actually tell me they saw it as just the state treasurer playing loan shark. Because when you think about it, like, the loan is only being made of money that would just be appropriated to these very agencies in a normal budgetary process. All Garrity is doing is giving it to them early at interest. Because it would be a 4.5% interest, and, like, the state doesn't comp anyone. Well, my understanding is that the state comps very, very few people for interest on late payments. Like, if you're a mental health operator and you have a contract with the state and the state falls behind, the state isn't giving you the back pay plus interest. Like, most people are required to do when we go in the debt, if we go in the debt. Like, you know, that time value of money's not caught. So all this is to say, Garrity has announced this program. The main question is, I mean, she put interest on that about 4.5%. I think that's right around the Fed baseline. So, you know, good market value, but at the same time, it's still interest. And the main argument she told me when I asked her is, like, she can't do it interest-free because of state law. There's legislation from Senate Republicans to get rid of that, to allow her to go interest-free on these loans. But again, I mean, Senate Democrats came out and said, this is all political posturing. What we need to do is pass a budget. Like, this is, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. This is being penny wise or pound foolish and fit, whatever, you know, of phrase you'll want to use, but that and they questioned the legal authority, because in 2015, during that really long impasse I mentioned, the treasurer kicked around doing this, and I think there was one legal ruling at the time, or just pamphlet, that said they can't loan anything. Obviously, Garrity has gone ahead. I don't know if anyone's suing over it yet, but the main point is, I would just go back to this question itself has become political, especially given the fact that Garrity is running against Governor Josh Shapiro.
Very interesting. I'm sure the timing is just an accident. Real quick, before we take a break, Stephen, use your crystal ball. Is this thing going to get solved anytime soon?
The people I talk to are not optimistic.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to elaborate much more, but I'll tell you that the people I talk to are very much not optimistic. I've heard December thrown around. And even then, that feels generous.
Oh, I think they can set the record, Stephen. I think we can go into the...
into the
and
new,
people say we don't do big things in America
I'm
anymore.
Telling
we
you.
We can set records.
Oh, boy. All right, we're going to take a break.
Stephen, record-setting performance by our state legislature. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for the good folks.
That's a record we don't want.
No.
Stephen Caruso from Spotlight PA is our guest. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Stephen, I want to ask about these judge elections, which my mailbox is too full of these postcards now. All right, this is like a year ago. I thought we were done with that.
Getting a couple of postcards myself.
Yeah, you're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.7 The Fox. We will come right back.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon,
exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Kevin Harlan here from Monday Night Football on Westwood One. Join us all season long for primetime action on the road to the playoffs and Super Bowl 60. Each week, Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner and I will have the call of great matchups, along with Mike Golick, senior and junior, in the studio. Don't miss out on the great NFL tradition that is Monday Night Football.
Catch all the action all season long. Sports Radio 98.7, The Fox. Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub, right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate Happy Hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines. The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails. Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
This is Jim Galante from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, join me, Dustin Hawkinsmith, T. Frank Carr, Andy Shea, and Jeff Byers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox and State College. We'll bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more on the Nittany Lions. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Fox Sports 98.7 for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Get up and get going with 98.7 The Fox. It's Let's Talk here on a Wednesday morning. Jeff and Scott with you, and we will have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment of today's big show.
Again, we're talking with Stephen Caruso from Spotlight PA, covers Harrisburg, the legislature, and some other things. SpotlightPA.org is their website. Again, these folks do great work. I'm a supporter and have been for a number of years. You guys keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great stuff. Although, now, Stephen, I follow you on X Twitter. I call it X Twitter, where apparently your name right now is Stephen Scaruso.
Yes, boo! It's October. It's Halloween month. Okay. It's scary.
Okay, it's very interesting. Now, you had a post yesterday. I got to ask you about this post. Like, okay, why? Your post yesterday, you said, two Amtrak police officers at 30th Street Station, that's in Philadelphia, with a two Amtrak officers with a police dog in tow, just went down a bench full of people, asking them to show tickets and then their destination if they didn't have one. Stephen, what the heck is this? What was that?
I believe 30th Street Station is trying to implement a policy to keep houseless people out and keep people from sitting on benches for too long. There are announcements that say, you know, you can only sit for 2 hours or so. I believe this was that attempt. It's just something I've been keeping an eye on now. It was very, I'll just say, it was very jarring to be, you know, I was standing in line waiting for my morning train and to watch. I think in general, look, you know, asking to show tickets, then, like, asking people who, you know, what their destination is. That one, that was fascinating to me. I haven't seen that in America yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way it's described, I'm like, okay, this sounds a little shady, all right? Very, because I've been to 30th, I've used the train, I've been to 30th Street Station. I'm like, who are these people just sitting around? All right, very interesting. Okay, the Supreme Court elections are suddenly interesting, which we don't normally say. These are, again, these are retention elections. So there are three members of the state Supreme Court who happen to all be Democrats, and you're supposed to go and say, yes, I want them to serve another 10 years, or no, I don't want them to serve anymore. And there's been, I think I've received five of these mega postcard things here in my mailbox. Stephen, in your experience, have you ever seen a judge election this, I'll call it, politicized? Because I don't recall. Maybe I've forgotten.
Well, I think what's different is seeing a retention election politicized. So how we choose judges in Pennsylvania, both on the county level and at the statewide level, is they run in partisan elections, Democrat versus Republican. Those are open seats. They get elected. Whoever wins gets 10 years on the court. And at the end of 10 years, they have to stand for retention election, where it's supposed to be a nonpartisan election on the merits of the judge's legal decision, legal thought process, how well they have followed the law. And that is just a yes or no decision. You're not supposed to be, you know, supposed to be, if you talk to the legal scholars who've kind of, you know, we'll talk about this process, like, this is supposed to be about the merits of them as a judge itself, not on their party. Of course, I think, as we've all been living through the last at least 10 years where courts have mattered a lot, court decisions have mattered a lot, the courts have been increasingly politicized, I think that's an increasingly hard decision. But all of this is me to say, I mean, there have been at least $20 million spent on individual state court races when it's an open seat, D versus R, looking at 2021 or 2023 when there were individual seats up on the court. Now, having these retention questions politicized like this, particularly by big money groups, that is brand new, and it has scared the heck out of a lot of people who do follow judicial goings-ons.
Okay. Now, let's see. Scott here. I'm a registered Republican, so I get all these cards in my mailbox. Apparently, the Commonwealth Leaders Fund has a lot of money, and they're spending it. Yeah, it's a pack on these big cards. Stephen, should I assume, have you seen these cards? Have you seen this stuff?
I have seen, I haven't seen every single one. I do keep a running tally as best I can of the ones I get pictures of or the ones that show up to my own household. As you know, I am a registered voter, too. Sorry, I hope that's not too far for me to say that I do vote. And with that said, like, we, you know, The Commonwealth Leaders Fund is part of a network of political groups. Some of them are nonprofit dark money groups. Some of them are PACs where you can go trace their money, like where it comes from. That's been heavily funded by Jeff Yass. He's a billionaire. He's Pennsylvania's richest resident. He's done it off of stock trading and options and things like that. In general, they support pretty conservative candidates, but they will support some Democrats from time to time, usually on the issue of school choice, which I mentioned. You know, for Democrats, there's always going to be a ton of spending on these races from the trial bar. You know, their interest is in a court that's friendly to, you know, civil lawsuits. You know, this is medical malpractice. This is the lawsuits you see advertised on TV, on billboards, you know, hit by a big truck, call me. And then also labor unions. They put a lot of money into this. The court's, you know, final arbiter on some issues that relate to, you know, unemployment compensation, laws around, you know, prevailing wage, laws around a lot of things. So, you know, and then on top of that, just because courts are so powerful these days, when in particular on things like election law, on things like redistricting, you know, everyone who has an interest in the balance of power, they're pouring money into this. I mean, you know, or abortion, for instance, lots of money that backs, you know, pro-abortion causes have gone to the vote yes to support the Democratic candidates, you know, but also Republicans are putting a lot of money in on the vote no side because they want to control the top court again. This court was controlled by Republicans until 2015 when these three judges flipped it. And, you know, controlling redistricting, how the lines are drawn, controls power. And if you control the court, you really have an upper hand in the redistricting process.
I guess, Stephen, I'm just, you know, these postcards, of course, have all the buzzwords, progressive, woke, you know, all these buzzwords. And they make claims about, I guess, rulings that that the court has made and so on. I guess I just simply like to know, are these claims accurate? I don't know if you, you have anything on that?
I mean, I can't vet every single claim made. But look, there's one I'll really point to, and you brought up Commonwealth. I mean, I can't remember if it was Commonwealth Leaders or Commonwealth Partners, both of which are separate groups, but part of the same umbrella I mentioned. They put out a mailer that said the liberal Democratic court gerrymandered the congressional map, and it included a picture of a old congressional map of Pennsylvania. The problem was, is the way if you looked at it, you would think, oh, wow, that map is ugly. That looks gerrymandered. You know, when you just see a map and the lines go here, there, everywhere, and you're just like, well, this is clearly some attempt to just, you know, put all the voters who like one guy in one place. That was the map they tossed out as unconstitutional, arguing it was an unconstitutional gerrymander. The map they implemented doesn't look like that. The map that they got rid of, the ugly one, the one that many people have just seen it and said, I know what that is, that's a gerrymander, that was drawn and by the Pennsylvania General Assembly in 2011, received bipartisan support. It was drawn by Republicans, but some Democrats were in their support, then signed by Governor Tom Corbett. And the map, that was a 13-5 map when it was tossed out. 13 Republicans to 5 Democrats. And that's a pretty crazy result when you think about how Pennsylvania is a state that historically swings a lot. And then the new map that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court implemented was 9-9. Now, there is a legal conversation that can be had about if the court went too far in implementing their own map. One Democratic judge at the time, not someone up for retention, but he was a Democratic judge, I believe it was Max Baer, actually didn't side with the rest of his colleagues in saying that the court could implement its own map, which is what they did. They cited the impasse by then-Governor Tom Wolf and the Republicans. So, like there is that. That's an actual conversation we could have, but that's not what the ad was saying. That was just saying, this is the gerrymandered map the court did, which is just patently false. That is not the map. And again, gerrymandered has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people. I think in general we can say is mailers flatten conversation. There is no nuance in a political mailer. The job of a political mailer is to get you really pissed and make you vote one way or the other. And that is not what anything in this race is really going to be trying to do. It's going to start a nuanced conversation. It's all going to be trying to just get people to go out and vote in an election they don't often think about.
Stephen, you can't see it, but there it is. I've got the card with the map on it. So, yeah, I got one of those, too. There it is. And the first time I saw this card, I'm like, now, wait a minute. That doesn't look right. And I had to look it up, what the current map is. And I'm thinking, okay, this is somebody trying to mislead somebody. That's old news right there. What the heck? Now, there are 7 members of the state Supreme Court. We've got these 3 who are up for retention. Stephen, from your knowledge, let's say all 3 lose in a month. Let's say they all, they all lose. All right, first off, what happens then? And second, will it really make a difference? In other words, would there really be a change?
So if all three lose, they will immediately leave the state Supreme Court. It will be down to four members. It would be tied 2-2. So that means already you're going to have a Supreme Court that's limited in its ability to make rulings, it potentially deadlocks the court on some really weighty questions. You know, obviously they could try to come to some middle ground on things, but that alone, I think, is concerned some people. Those three could be replaced midstream if Governor Shapiro could find a deal with the Republican State Senate to put three placeholders on the court. I mean, given we just spent about, 20 minutes talking about how we don't have a state budget, I'll leave that to your listeners to decide they think that's possible. And then in 2027, which is the next year, there will be a judicial election. There will then be three open seats on the ballot that will be run partisan races, D versus R, like we're traditionally used to, just, you get to choose between them. So that's kind of what the case would be. The way it's been put to me is that some court observers are concerned that losing those three justices would really hobble the court's ability to make decisions. If that's the case, I think that's like I am not a legal scholar. I think that in general is something to keep an eye on. And either way, whatever happens in November is an attempt to like play a long game about 2027.
All right, okay, hold on. Let me see if I understand this right. If all three lose next month, they're out immediately. There's no grace period or something. They're out.
January 1st. They'll have 2 months to pack up their things and make sure their office is cleaned up.
But then there, unless a deal is made, and yes, we were all giggling and chuckling about that, the state Supreme Court would only have four members until 2027. The next election.
Technically January 2028, again, if you really want to be technical, but yes.
So that would be a 2-year period with
Correct.
Only four justices on the Supreme Court instead of seven.
Correct.
Wow. Okay, so I haven't seen anything about that. Stephen, I'll be honest.
Lawyers don't like to speculate.
Yeah, on the show here, I've shared, I'm uncomfortable voting for judges. It's not like a politician. I promise this. I'll give you this. I'll promise that. That's not what a judge is supposed to do. Has anybody ever down there discussed alternate ways to choose judges other than elections? Because it's never been a good fit for me. Why are we voting for judges? Has anybody ever discussed an alternative way to do this?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's a conversation that's had semi-regularly. The main alternative, I should say, Pennsylvania system is fairly unique in terms of the exact structure of partisan races and then retention races, but we're not the only state to elect judges. Many do. But with that said, there's a conversation around it's usually known as merit selection. It's somewhat similar to what the Supreme Court of the United States does, or federal judges writ large. The main difference is that is entirely up to the discretion of the president to appoint judges. In merit selection, the governor oversees a august committee of legal minds, supposed to be, made up of appointees from both parties, who will vet people and then put them up. And then the governor chooses from a short list made by this commission, and then puts it to the Senate to confirm them. So it adds a bunch of, choke points that are just meant to kind of weed out anyone but, what is seen as anyone who's seen but like a strong legal mind who could sit on the court. Look, and the pushback on that is always going to be, though, like, who sits on these commissions? It's a centralized process, that is deferring the people's power, so to speak, to elected officials. Yes, we live in a republic. We live in a representative democracy where that's their job. But, the alternative take is that judges make rulings that impact our lives every day. COVID shutdowns were backstopped by judges, including federal and state. The three judges who are on the court all, struck down an attempt by Senate Republican or red state Republicans writ large to end Governor Tom Wolf's COVID powers prematurely. There was also, they've made rulings on redistricting, on election law. They've backstopped Act 77, the mail-in ballots, the mail-in ballot law from legal challenges. They threw out Donald Trump's attempts to, overturn the 2020 election. Like, these judges, and abortion too, and then I could keep going on. All of this to say, judges make big weighty decisions. So the alternative take on that is just, you know, I understand if it makes some people uncomfortable. Judges are occupy this interesting position in the way we view authority, I think, in America. But also, like, if they're making decisions on these big weighty issues, let alone deciding the fate of someone who just got called in for shoplifting, shouldn't we vote on that? Is that something people should have a say on? Again, I think that's a very open conversation that it is hard. I don't think it has an easy answer. And the people who defend judicial elections are usually the ones who go more on that populist side of the equation. Like, no, it's important to protect our voters' right to make a decision. You know, or the other way you could put it is important to affect the 20% of voters who turn out these elections' right to make a decision when they've got a lot of ads from big money political groups that throw a bunch of mailers at them. Potato, potato. Maybe I'm too cynical.
That's the thing. I wonder how many. I also feel uncomfortable because I try to keep up on this stuff, but I'm like, I don't know. Sounds like.
Oh, it's hard.
I can't delve into every case, and yeah, I'm not sure how much to trust some of the literature, and yeah, I want people that are just interpreting the law the way it should be interpreted, and even that then leads to, well, this is how it should be interpreted. Mm-hmm. This is how it,
I mean, in 2023,
with electing, but yeah, I'm not sure there's a better alternative.
I don't know. Go ahead,
Steven. In 2023, I was reading court cases on eminent domain and municipal firings from a Montgomery County judge who Republicans nominated to be their Supreme Court nominee. Like, and I was trying to discern from these decisions, what could I tell people about their judicial philosophy? I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I tried my best. It's hard. I'm not saying it's impossible. I don't think, like, I'm not trying to say the legal profession is beyond all any of our minds. You know, I think people can figure out a lot of stuff for themselves with the right resources and the right, you know, and a little bit of time. But at the same time, though, like, you know, reading tea leaves of one decision to get to another, very hard for anyone to do. And I'm, you know, a journalist who spends way too much time thinking about state government.
Sometime we could do a whole show on eminent domain too. Opinion here that the abuses that governments have had regarding eminent domain is infuriating to me. But that's neither here nor there right now. But
all right. Well, Stephen, we appreciate your time this morning, folks. Again, website spotlightpa.org. Or a lot of, you know, news outlets carry Spotlight PA stories. You see the little tagline there. Again, Stephen, you guys are doing great stuff. You're covering stuff that other folks are not covering, and that's what I like. And please keep doing what you're doing, and we'll catch you another time.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to talk whenever.